Corey Feldman has no idea what it's like not to be famous. He was just 3 years old in this McDonald's commercial.
I literally was famous before I knew my own name.
His roles defined the 80s. Goonies.
This was my dream, my wish.
Stand By Me.
Call my dad Looney again, I'll kill you.
License to Drive.
The only difference between you and that greaseball is that he has a license and you don't.
Films that propelled him into the spotlight for his entire youth. But being famous so young, he says, caused serious damage to him and his friends.
Do you feel like you missed out on a normal childhood?
What childhood? I don't know what that means.
A lost childhood and a loss of innocence. He blames the adults, not just those looking to profit from charming children, but also some with far more sinister motives.
I can tell you that the number one problem in Hollywood was and is and always will be pedophilia. That's the biggest problem for children in this industry.
The casting couch even applies to children.
Oh, yeah. Not in the same way. It's all done under the radar.
Nobody talks about pedophilia.
It's the big secret.
And it's widespread?
Oh, yeah. I was surrounded by them when I was 14 years old. Surrounded. Literally. Didn't even know it. It wasn't until I was old enough to realize what they were and what they wanted and what they were about and the types of people that were surrounding me till I went, oh my God, they were everywhere like vultures.
Vultures who Feldman says abused him and his best friend, the late child actor Corey Haim, his co-star in The Lost Boys.
Well, what happens if my mom is dating the head vampire?
Feldman says the trauma of that pedophilia contributed to Haim's death.
There's one person to blame in the death of Corey Haim, and that person happens to be a Hollywood mogul, and that person needs to be exposed, but unfortunately I can't be the one to do it. But the person that knows who did it and knows who he is watching right now, I guarantee you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
Yeah. There was a circle of older men that surrounded themselves around this group of kids, and they all had either their own power or connections to great power in the entertainment industry.
Feldman won't name names. And he admits his friend had a struggle with addiction, which he says was a mechanism to cope with his demons.
It was a symptom.
It was a symptom, correct.
Are we in it?
In 2008, the two Coreys confronted each other on their reality show about the dark past they shared.
You let me get around in my life, man, raped, so to speak, when I was about 14 and a half, and I'm saying this right now. What'd you do, man, when you saw that going down when I was 14 to me? What'd you do? You knew about it.
You want to talk about the truth? Okay, well, then let's talk about the truth. I was being molested at the same time by somebody else. What'd you do? You know, there's a lot of good people in this industry, but there's also a lot of really, really sick, corrupt people in this industry. And there are people in this industry who have gotten away with it for so long that they feel they're above the law.
Hmm.
And that's got to change. That's got to stop.
Right, that's Corey Feldman, ladies and gentlemen, the child star, telling it as it is, you know?
Very much so, and I very much appreciate your playing that so that people get the true intensity, the real seriousness of this issue, whereas Corey Feldman will not name names. I've named plenty of names in plenty of the interviews I've been on. We don't need to go over that. The Corey, of course, does not have the background where I have, where he would have the confidence to do that, because he would seriously be contending with life-threatening issues were he to come out with many of these names. But let's take a look at how Hollywood, when I spoke of Britney Spears and her open breakdown into different altars, then one of the things that is interesting is that Hollywood has portrayed this so graphically, or more specifically the music industry, through its videos, that I'm literally impressed by what I see. And I'm not quite sure if there's an intentional message, certainly on the part of Madonna, for instance, when she did the video Die Another Day. Die Another Day shows a woman being interrogated, and while she's being interrogated, she is in her mind battling between different split personalities. And while the personalities are battling each other in her mind, the interrogators are unable to basically access any information. So they increasingly go to more violent lengths in the video to break her to the point where the video has a very ambiguous ending where she's either escaping into her mind or she literally escapes by occult methods because Madonna is very much into the Kabbalah and kind of incorporates that for artistic creative reasons. But other than that, the rest of the video is graphic enough where it exposes how intense this schizophrenic experience can be. When her personalities are cutting and slicing and injuring each other, the cuts and the bruises appear on her physical body. So it's almost like a self-induced stigmata that I have seen that can manifest on these various super soldiers when they are in that intense of a breakdown or a transition. It literally does occur to that. And many of them, of course, die or auto-destruct either under orders when they become a liability or expendable, or they auto-destruct on their own. You would think that such a long, extensive training process would make them an asset that's too valuable to sacrifice, but the reality is they are quite expendable, and they just get more kids, more children, anytime they want. And
can I ask, is there a degree of pleasure derived from the sacrificing of these children? You know, like you're giving up an asset or whatever, they must be doing it to get their rocks off.
Oh, I'm sure that is part of all of this. Then I'm certain that is indeed a part of it. I'll give you an example that I've used before. When you see the movie Black Hawk Down, and the hero's name in the film is Danny Grimes. Danny Grimes is a fictitious name created for the real character around which the film is centered, which was Master Sergeant, U.S. Army Ranger, John Stebbins. And Stebbins is spending the rest of his life in a military brig, Fort Leavenworth, for child rape and molestation, abduction, keeping children chained to the wall in his basement, feeding dog food bowls, raping them every day. His own wife turned him in. And this individual, what makes him stand out is the fact that all of the former Rangers or retired Army will tell you he committed all of his crimes after retirement. Well, the reality is, if that's the case, then he should be in any regular civilian prison with all the other baby raping SOBs. But he's in a military brig. That means that when he committed these crimes, whether he was retired or not, he was under military control, which means he was abducting and raping these children under orders. So that should add a dimension to this, which most people never consider. Now, I've seen far more examples than that. One example being the man who developed Loglan, or logical language. It was Dr. James Cook, Encyclopedia Brown. Encyclopedia was his nickname. That's where we got the term Encyclopedia Brown from, for a series of children's detective books. He actually wrote a science fiction novel himself called The Troika Incident, which was a socialist utopian novel that basically anticipated and predicted the internet, only he had a communistic vision of info-socialism in which all information could never be trademarked, there was no intellectual property, that it was a universal Akashic record, so to speak, in cyberspace. So he was truly idealistic. And this individual was a sociologist who had developed the board game Careers, which was trademarked by Parker Brothers and sold for 20, 30 years. So anyone who's played that board game Careers, you have James Cook Brown to thank for designing that game. Well, James Brown was hired by the U.S. military to design an artificial military language. So what he did was he synthesized the 9 most commonly spoken languages on Earth, and he basically narrowed down all the aspects of those languages that were most commonly used and eliminated all of the cultural nuances so he would have a singularly pragmatic, practical language with no cultural baggage. Well, they had to have a individual live with him who was military, who could use his home as a communications headquarters to learn this language and then deploy this language by using it on the communication system, the radio, the transmitter, the transceiver, with various units in the field who were training on using it in the field. Now, This way, America could work with its NATO allies or other allies, and they were trying to develop the synthetic language. Well, this individual happened to be a U.S. Army Ranger, Master Sergeant, who was retired and contracted as a mercenary by the U.S. government for plausible deniability. Well, he wound up raping this guy's son, and that's when James Cook Brown went nuts. He basically disassociated with the Department of Defense. He built his own private, personally designed, futuristic catamaran sailboat, and he wound up sailing around the world trying to promote Logland, this artificial language, as a language of peace, of universal communication. Well, he died ultimately in a port hospital in Argentina in this forlorn quest. The language went into obscurity, and the reason I know so much about this was because I was responsible for coordinating the documentation and the communications between himself from the University of San Diego and with the Department of Defense at the Presidio, because the Presidio was where the Defense Language Institute was established. It later on moved down to, of course, Santa Clara or Santa Cruz, something like that. But it had started off in San Francisco. So I was dealing with all the records. Later on, after his death, I tried to follow up on James Brown, and the University of San Diego denied all affiliation with him, denied that he had ever been employed there, denied that he existed. But if people do research independently, they'll find out everything I say is true. And so this is the kind of evil that we're talking about, because the men that they employ cannot stop themselves. Like any child molester, whether they're ordered to molest children or not, they're going to do it because that's what they do. And so even though this man screwed up everything for the DOD and crashed the whole Logland program, then this individual was just part of the collateral damage of this. This is why I say, when you're talking about putting the shoe bomber or the underwear bomber on the plane, that's possible. I mean, that's entirely conceivable that the DOD would be behind that, or the CIA or any of these agencies. But keep in mind that these are also agencies of incredible corruption, incompetence. And there's just as many things, if not more, that go wrong than go right with what they're doing. So there has to be all kinds of collateral damage from the super soldier program that we don't know about. A super victim of this sort could leave a trail of bodies all over North America or the United Kingdom. He wouldn't remember any of it. So because each one was...
Okay.
Oh, great.
Okay, so we're back. This is great. The fifth, sixth time we've been knocked off?
At least, considering the subject.
It's un-frickin-believable. Un-frickin-believable.
But this, if the government really wants to take you offline, they can take you offline. We're discovering that right now. You know, that's this is far more than just solar flares. This is far more than just a magnetic storm. But to bring it to a kind of new level, another personal experience that I had based on my own memories, when Lady Gaga came out with her video Bad Romance, I remember I didn't see it until maybe a year and a half or 2 years after it was released. And then I kept watching it over and over and over again and wondering what was it that mesmerized me so much about the video. And it wasn't the song itself, because Lady Gaga never lip syncs. And whenever she does a performance, she does one that's fairly different each time, because she individualizes her singing with each performance. But in the video itself, the official video, there is a scene where she says, "I don't want to be friends," that part of the song. And when she says, "I don't want to be friends, I don't want to be friends," that was the part that had kept grabbing me. And I recognized that it was a flashback to the memory I had at the Presidio military base, where, of all things, we had a children's room in the postal library, and we had many elderly ladies who worked with us who, because they were government, could never be fired, and they didn't want to retire, and they all had Parkinson's, they shook, they couldn't type, and so the only thing they were really good for was reading, in terms of the job at work, was in reading children's stories to children in the children's room during the daylight hours. Well, there was one girl who wouldn't leave the children's room at one time, and like it was a sanctuary for her. The elderly ladies, of course, couldn't pick her up and eject her, so they had me physically pick her up and get her out of the library to wait for her parents to pick her up, because they were so freaked out they didn't want her in the library. So when I went in to pick her up, she kept clawing at my eyes, saying, I don't want to be friends. I don't want to be friends. And it's the same movements Lady Gaga makes in the Bad Romance video. And, of course, you know, I had scars, just nail trails down my face for the next several weeks, if not months, with the mania with which she was trying to claw my eyes out. I realized, of course, very quickly, this was how child molesters always approach children, is let's be friends. Okay, but we're friends. I can do this because we're friends. You know, we're friends now. All the friends keep secrets. Friends don't tell on their friends. So this whole friends thing becomes anathema to children who are victims of that kind of molestation. Of course, when I speak of the Presidio, by this time it should be known to some of our listenership who asks us, as our archives. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's why Lady Gaga doesn't want to be friends anymore. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.